report on how well they did against a goal or an objective that the senior leaders gave to them. It's as if the powerful people on high write the tablets in stone, pass them down throughout the company, and then ask you to come in once or twice a year on how well you did. It's inspiring, isn't it? The question we need to be asking is what really have been the results of running things this way. And I want to tell you, not much. What the four disciplines allow you to do is to make a major paradigm shift, one in which the senior leaders simply say to the organization that we want to grow and we want to move forward by this much through our wildly important goals with an X to Y by when. Then the leaders and the teams that make up the company decide what the team wigs and lead measures are to achieve them. They decide the key elements of how we track progress. The real difference here is that the leaders are then reporting on their own goals instead of the ones given to them from above. Today, with the four disciplines, our people talk about the things they decided to do, the time frame in which they decided to get them done, and the progress they made toward their own goals. Corporate America is all about asking people to perform to achieve somebody else's goals. But if it comes down to making or missing your goal, that's when the creative juices start flowing. Achieving a corporate budget will never be as important as achieving goals that you set for yourself, as well as keeping commitments that you made for yourself. It's amazing how different the behavior is. This is powerful stuff. In our company, I don't think we have any bad people. They're all just wonderful. But sometimes they're wonderful people that have been with the company 20, 30, or more years, and they just can't get over the fact that we have to make changes. One way of working has to go, and new methods and processes have to come in. For some people, we just can't figure out a way to sell or convince or otherwise make them understand that things have to change. But with the four disciplines, you have a process that makes clear what needs to change, and it helps hold everyone accountable for accepting and adapting to those changes. It also lets you take the learnings from one way of working and apply them to the other parts of the business. I remember running my first warehouse when I was in my 20s. I didn't understand much about how a warehouse operated because I grew up as a store manager and didn't learn about warehousing until I got involved in the distribution business. But I remember walking through the warehouse one day when something caught my eye. Two employees were on a break, and they were playing checkers. And for some reason, that bothered me. I sat down with the two guys and I said, "Hey, I'm delighted that you're playing checkers. But why are you playing checkers now?" And they said, "Well, we're on our break, and this is what we look forward to every day." And do you know what bothered me about that? It was that the work was so boring, the only thing these guys could look forward to was playing checkers. Years later, I was walking through a different facility and I saw a big upright piano. When I asked what an upright piano was doing in the middle of a manufacturing plant, I was told to wait a few minutes and I would see. Soon after, a bell rang, and all the employees gathered around the upright piano to sing songs from their Russian homeland. I thought, wouldn't it be something if you could channel that energy and connect it to the business? Instead of singing for 15 minutes, what if the enthusiasm was actually about the business? Today, as I walk through some of our facilities since we've implemented the four disciplines, I see the equivalent of checkers and the upright piano for all of our employees. They are having fun. They're engaged. It's their version of checkers. Instead of coming to work every day and just pulling cases, they come to work with meaning. More important, they're working on things they can understand. It's not EBITDA, and it's not revenue, and it's not earnings per share. It's how many cases can we select in an hour? It's focusing on things that connect with their world that allows them, in addition to doing the work, to have some element of fun and a feeling of accomplishment. This is what makes the four disciplines powerful all the way through the company. When we can do those kinds of things, it's very powerful. Another thing that I would encourage you to think about as you're engaged with the four disciplines is to look for future leaders as you attend WIG sessions. You'll see people that are growing up in your organization, that are becoming leaders. Maybe today they drive a forklift, or maybe they receive trucks, or maybe they're inventory control people. But through this process, you're going to see them firsthand. Now, I can't say that without also looking at the other end of the spectrum. Because the WIG session doesn't just identify the people that are doing exceptionally well, it also identifies the people who are not showing up for the meetings and who are not making their commitments. These are the people that are holding you back, the ones who are keeping you from reaching your goals. Ultimately, the four disciplines of execution will enable you to identify, promote, protect, and retain the people who are accomplishing their goals. And it will help you identify those who are not. The greatest results we've seen are coming from teams that have the most vivid and the most recognizable scoreboards that can be easily understood by even the broadest group of people. When we walk into some of these warehouses, it's amazing to see how creative people are. Out of 100 employees, somebody will be an artist. We've proven that over and over again. If you have a problem, take a look at your scoreboard and ask yourself these questions. Is it visible? Does it really connect with the people that need to see the score? Is it simple and easy to understand? And did the people who are going to use it have a part in creating it? Or was it created for them? Remember, a scoreboard is a very powerful thing. Some of the ones you'll look at might seem like the goofiest things in the world, but they may also be the most powerful because they mean something to the people that need to see them every day. It doesn't matter that you don't like it. It really doesn't. The last advice that I would offer is that when you celebrate your accomplishments, don't thank the senior leaders. Please. The senior leaders didn't do anything. I've never seen a single wildly important goal that was accomplished by a senior leader. Let me tell you the way it really works. The senior leaders found the tool. They owned up to the fact that things weren't working, and they found a process that would help. But it's the leaders and the teams down in your organization that embraced it, that learned it, that used it, and that ultimately delivered remarkable results. The senior leaders don't need to be thanked. The senior leaders need to thank the leaders and the teams down on the front line. At the end of the day, senior leaders are like golf caddies. If the leaders on the front line tell you they need a 9-iron, your job is to give them a damn good 9-iron. If they need a new driver, your job is to get them one that will hit the ball the farthest. And that's exactly what you do with the four disciplines. This program has provided a means by which we can pitch the ball, and because of the disciplines and the organization around it, we can actually know that the ball is going to be caught by someone who's accountable on the other side. It's beautiful. It's also provided a means for leaders and teams to get the ball and run with it, and to be held accountable for it. But it's also enabled us to recognize those who are doing a great job. In summary, it's very powerful. Dave Grissen and Marriott International. Now let's hear from Dave Grissen and the Marriott International Corporation. Dave Grissen is president of the Americas for Marriott International, and he began by implementing the four disciplines in 8 pilot hotels. These 8 hotels produced results so significant that Dave and his team went on to conduct 2 progressively larger pilots and ultimately implemented the four disciplines in more than 700 Marriott hotels over the next 2 years, making them one of the largest and the most significant implementations of the four disciplines worldwide. The following are his insights, as well as his description of that experience, in his own words. Dave Grissen writes, "Let me start by explaining that Marriott, a leading hospitality company, has nearly 3,700 properties around the globe and approximately 129,000 employees in company-operated hotels. The Marriott family established the core values and culture of the organization 85 years ago, which are instilled in the employees today. J. Willard Marriott believed that if you take care of your employees, they will take care of your guests, and those guests will come back. The spirit of service reflected in this philosophy is the cornerstone of the company's strong culture, high employee satisfaction, and continued growth. We continue to look for ways to innovate and improve our operation while embracing our culture. As a result, as soon as I heard about the four disciplines of execution, I thought it was perfect for our business. It was almost as if someone had watched our operation and designed a process that was customized for exactly what we needed. The best evidence of this is that it's one of those processes that people run toward instead of away from. In fact, we have yet to ask a single hotel to participate. They all come to us and ask to be part of it. We began our implementation of the four disciplines with 8 pilot hotels. By the end of the pilot, every one of those hotels had achieved remarkable results. Perhaps the best example comes from our largest company-operated hotel, the Marriott Marquis in New York City. In the first year of implementing the four disciplines, the team achieved the highest guest satisfaction scores in this great hotel's 30-year history. Along with this achievement, they also recorded their highest ever results in both revenue and profit. As most leaders know, achieving record results in sales, profit, and the satisfaction of your customers in the same year is quite an achievement. Based on this success, we then made the decision to implement the four disciplines in over 700 hotels in North and South America, all in pursuit of a wildly important goal: to become the preeminent lodging company on both continents. We began by establishing a team of experienced leaders within Marriott who would form the core of our infrastructure and who would provide guidance and accountability in partnership with Franklin Covey. Establishing this internal team was an important investment for us, and once that was in place, we were ready to systematically implement the four disciplines in each of the hotels in our major markets. As you can imagine, this was a large-scale effort, one that required a significant investment from our leaders at every level. But in city after city, the leaders were not only committed, they were passionate about the power of these disciplines and their ability to use them to achieve their wildly important goals. Over a 2-year period, we certified almost 4,000 leaders and completed the implementation of the four disciplines in over 700 hotels, as well as in our national sales teams and many of our centralized corporate teams, such as human resources and information technology. During this time, about 10,000 employees began using the process, and together they recorded 1 million commitments toward our wildly important goal. This illustrates the high level of engagement and dedication to the process, as well as the scope of our engagement. While our plans for further implementation still continue, we can now clearly see that the four disciplines of execution have given us an operating system for focusing large numbers of people on very precise goals and for sustaining that focus until they are achieved. This execution platform allows hotels to create their own targeted goals that are aligned to the company's vision. With this clear vision, employees understand how their day-to-day activities relate to the company's overall business results, and they feel that they are working toward a common goal. As a result, we have a level of adaptability and focus, engagement and reporting that is unique in our industry. As I look back and think about the advice I might offer to other leaders listening to this book, I want to offer a few key lessons that I believe are most important. First, design your implementation to fit your culture. While the four disciplines will work in any culture, the method of implementation will vary based on the unique attributes of your organization and your people, as well as what resonates best with them. In our culture, if I had simply mandated the implementation of the four disciplines at every hotel, it would not have worked. While this might have been the most efficient method, in our culture, what was really needed was buy-in. To help us gain this, we had the leaders from the 8 original pilot hotels, many of whom have decades of experience with us, gather with leaders from the other hotels at a regional meeting. And when the general managers from each of the pilot hotels stood up and acknowledged that the four disciplines had brought their team a better way of focusing and achieving results, it was priceless. But when they said, "We'll never go back to the way we executed before," it became contagious. As a leader, you're always tempted to implement the ideas that you believe in most passionately. However, what you have to realize is that if you offer the four disciplines as just another good idea, you won't generate the level of commitment needed to be successful. We've all implemented ideas where it seemed that we had buy-in initially, but later we realized that the organization simply allowed them to die a quiet death. This doesn't happen because people are against the idea. It happens because they're busy in their whirlwind. Generating real buy-in takes longer, but the result is that it really works. You can mandate speed to market of any new program, but the real test is, are they doing it? With the four disciplines, taking additional time to implement it well will result in a more successful rollout and greater results. Second, realize that it's harder to implement the four disciplines in an organization that's already very successful. When you're failing, it's easy to help your team see their burning platform, and as a result, to see their need to change. But when you have an organization that's been really successful for many years, it's much harder for them to see why they should try something new. They are also more likely to challenge the validity of these new ideas. Leaders who are struggling are ready to accept anything that will help them. But leaders who are succeeding need the time and the opportunity to assess an idea on their own and to test its worth. The pilot results, coupled with our service culture and belief that success is never final, helped to cultivate this leadership buy-in. Understanding your culture, leaders, and how to implement new ideas is another aspect of why a careful rollout is essential. Third, the senior leader must focus on holding all leaders accountable. In other words, once they're in, they have to be all in. To do this well, you need the tools, such as reporting systems and regular accountability that the four disciplines and the software provide. When the leaders who report to you understand that this is important enough for you to watch it every week, they will see that it's real and that it's not going away. The automated system rolls up to me, and each week I'm reviewing their performance. The clearest way you demonstrate that this is how we now execute is by holding them accountable for the results. But as soon as you let one leader off the hook, everyone else gets the message and their focus starts to decline. The transparency of the results helps with this, since all senior leaders, including me, can view the details at the hotel level. Even leaders who are passionate and committed need the extra pressure of accountability to help them stay focused, especially when their whirlwind is raging. Fourth, make sure you have the infrastructure to support your implementation. If your implementation is small, having one or two four disciplines coaches may be enough. For the size and the speed of the rollout we were planning, I knew that without a sufficient infrastructure, we couldn't be successful. Making this level of investment up front is never easy. It requires people of real talent. We chose very experienced people, leaders who had operational experience in our hotels and who had the credibility to influence others and to get the job done. Looking back, this was one of the most important decisions we made. In addition to talented leaders implementing the four disciplines, we also knew that we needed the right tools and systems and training to support the effort. We even branded the program to show our company's commitment to this process and make it part of the culture. We also designed and built reporting tools to track participation and results, and we used virtual training. Since we were launching across 15 countries in multiple languages, we needed different training methodologies to implement the program in the desired time frame and to ensure our speed to market. Fifth, remember that implementing the four disciplines will raise the engagement of your team. Since I began by emphasizing the importance of understanding your culture, I'll come full circle now by emphasizing that the four disciplines can take even a very strong culture, such as the one that we enjoy, to an even higher level. Because each individual on the team sees the impact of their performance on the team's scoreboard every week, they are not only accountable, they're also engaged. They can clearly see that what they do each day really matters. While this has always been true in our company, implementing the four disciplines has helped us to strengthen this level of engagement. As I've stated, each employee has a clear vision of the goals, which are tied directly to our core values. Everyone, from our frontline staff to our management teams to our COOs, understand how what they are doing impacts the company. And this gives our employees a strong voice. They know that everyone can make a difference. We are innovating at the ground level. While Four Disciplines focuses on execution to drive business results, it has the added benefit of giving employees skills to use beyond work and throughout the rest of their career. We've heard countless stories from employees of how they've used the concepts to make improvements in their personal lives. Providing this education and training and investing in our leaders is yet another way our employees are further engaged. Today, as we continue to roll out the four disciplines, it remains a unique investment in our company and in our people. It's also one that is changing the way in which we operate day to day. Whether we focus our wildly important goals on market share or profit or guest satisfaction, we know that the four disciplines will enable us to achieve them. For great business skills, or for great life skills, the four disciplines is an all-encompassing process about how you hold yourself accountable, how you hold others accountable, and ultimately, how you execute. Leanne Talbot and Comcast. Leanne Talbot is the Senior Vice President of Comcast's Freedom Region, which includes Comcast's headquarters in Philadelphia and the surrounding areas. Prior to that, she was the Senior Vice President of the Greater Chicago Region, where she was responsible for marketing, sales, and operations in Central and Northern Illinois, Northwest Indiana, and Southwest Michigan. The Greater Chicago Region was one of Comcast's larger operating regions, but also one of the most challenged in terms of performance. In Leanne's words, while the potential was there, the region had not been able to change the trajectory of its performance. 2 years later, Leanne and her team had moved the Greater Chicago region from last place out of more than a dozen regions to second place in the company's internal rankings, and are now trending upwardly even further. The following are Leanne's insights, as well as her description of her experience in implementing 4DX throughout the region. Leanne writes, "Do in Chicago what you did in your previous region. Take it to first place." That was the mission I was given by the president of Comcast Cable as I interviewed for the leadership position of the Greater Chicago region, a region known for two important characteristics. It was one of the largest in size, representing 10% of the company, and it was not performing well. Over the past 9 years, the region had remained last in virtually every metric Comcast used to measure performance, despite a succession of leaders. To put it simply, this wasn't a happy place, and talented people didn't want to risk the move to the Chicago region because they thought it could negatively impact their careers. So the stage was set. It was clear that we needed to improve our results quickly and show that this important region was on track. And because of the importance of the region, we were also getting a significant level of attention, what we refer to as the love, that added additional pressure. Simply put, we needed a disciplined plan to execute with excellence, and we needed it now. We began by ensuring that the right leadership team was in place, one that would create a culture of diverse thought, respect, and accountability. This ultimately meant that 70% of the people in leadership roles had to change, as we worked to create a visibly engaged team of leaders. Next, our team needed to believe that they could win, So we looked for every opportunity to celebrate a success, no matter how small. And at first, they were hard to find. But over the next several months, success bred more success, and our team slowly began to believe in themselves. We also had key champions in the company that were engaged with us, and they helped to echo our success throughout Comcast, reinforcing our team's new mindset. With these foundational elements in place, we then knew we needed to find the one focus that would be our primary catalyst for dramatic improvement. This was a difficult assignment when there were so many areas of our operation needing attention. We've all heard that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And this is exactly what happened for us. One of the leaders on our team happened to attend a luncheon on the four disciplines of execution. He returned from that luncheon and walked straight into my office saying, "We need this." When I listened to the four disciplines audio CD that night on my way home, I had to agree. In fact, I couldn't wait to get started. My team was trapped in its whirlwind, and I was convinced that the four disciplines were the way out. There was only one problem. As a region, we were not yet achieving our goals. And as a new leader, I faced the difficult decision of justifying money spent on a new program while we were simultaneously eliminating all but the most critical expenses. More personally, I also worried whether making this investment might mistakenly signal that I didn't believe my team was capable of turning the region around on its own. But in the end, I took the risk. I truly believed that the four disciplines would give us the structure and the focus we needed. Throughout the implementation, I never saw the four disciplines as a training program or even as a management program. Instead, the four disciplines were an operating system that would enable us to sustain our necessary whirlwind while also moving the needle on our most important objectives. In essence, the four disciplines would give us a way to systematically work the plan we had created and ensure we delivered results despite the urgent demands of our day-to-day operations. We began quietly with a pilot in the city of Chicago. As the third largest city in the country, Chicago is a unique environment. Running a cable system there is a significant challenge, one that had resulted in some of our lowest performance metrics. Despite all our efforts, we just couldn't seem to get traction there. It was the ideal environment in which to prove the four disciplines, because if they worked in Chicago, we knew they would work throughout the region. What happened next, to our results, and more importantly, to the engagement of the team, drove the decision to implement the four disciplines throughout the entire region. A key metric in our business, we were able to cut our repeat rate almost in half. Repeats are when we have to revisit a customer's home to address an issue we've attempted to address at least once prior. In addition, we doubled the number of customers saved. That means that when customers wanted to cancel their services, we were able to convince them to stay, along with a host of other operating metrics that were all moving in the right direction. Already, our small investment in the four disciplines helped us reduce costs by more than $2 million in only 5 months. Beyond these operating results, the effect on the team was dramatic. I saw tech supervisors, and I want to tell you, these are big guys, walking through the halls wearing pink wigs to their wildly important goal sessions. I saw them in their meetings, holding teddy bears, laughing and working together. Frontline technicians were huddled around the scoreboards every week, waiting for their results to be posted. And through it all, the needle continued to move substantially on our wildly important goal. Because we acknowledged the whirlwind with our teams, we gained the needed credibility. We were honest in saying that our day jobs would always be there. The whirlwind doesn't go away. But we also promised, and we proved, that the four disciplines would allow us to make progress in key areas that would ultimately help to diminish that whirlwind. We also learned how critical it was to have a four disciplines coach with the teams. To build that resource into the organization is instrumental to the success of the four disciplines, and it also helped us to grow our own internal experts. Our coaches were human resources partners, already teamed with the groups who expanded their responsibilities to fulfill the role of coach. And they made sure the WIG sessions were held each week, that teams found their cadence, that scoreboards were created and updated, results were celebrated, and teams were accountable to fulfill their commitments. We also saw an additional benefit emerge as the teams that had already launched started to pay it forward by helping the newer teams. Those just launching were invited to attend WIG sessions and the summit meetings of more seasoned teams. Those who were veterans of the process acted as consultants for other teams. In the end, we chose the four disciplines to help us achieve financial and customer service goals, and the results we produced were extraordinary. But the cultural impact of the four disciplines on our teams was icing on the cake. Leading the Greater Chicago region to success didn't happen solely because we invested in the four disciplines of execution. We put a solid leadership team in place, we quickly assessed our gaps and developed an action plan that would drive results. But it all came together when we found the operating system, the four disciplines of execution, that enabled us to navigate the journey to winning. Today, we are near the top of the rankings and are continuing to improve with respect to our financial and customer service performance. And we have started to receive recognition as an employer of choice, including being recognized as a top 100 workplace for 2011 by the Chicago Tribune. I really wouldn't have thought all of this progress could have happened so quickly when we first began our journey. Today, I think of the four disciplines like the frame of a house. But I always remember it is a house that could not have been built without talented people and the drive, hard facts, support from above, strong leaders, and a champion to steer the entire operation. B.J. Walker and the Georgia Department of Human Services. B.J. Walker has served in the administrations of two governors, both Illinois and Georgia, as well as the mayor of the city of Chicago. In 2004, she was appointed by Governor Sonny Perdue to run the Georgia Department of Human Resources, a massive human services agency with a combined budget of over $3.2 billion and almost 20,000 in staff. The agency had oversight of virtually all of the state's human services. In 2007, she began using the four disciplines of execution to help move forward reforms across the agency. This was particularly true in areas where there were errors in frontline practice that might result in serious injury or death for their clients. Under BJ's watch, a number of key indicators in child welfare, in child support, in welfare to work, and in food stamp eligibility continued to make significant and sustained progress. The following are her insights, as well as her description of that experience. BJ says, "In 2007, when Governor Sonny Perdue asked me to use Franklin Covey's four disciplines of execution, I was making slow but steady progress in improving a troubled and crisis-ridden agency. However, we were clearly struggling to achieve consistency in our performance, to fully convince our massive bureaucracy that we were targeting the right priorities, and to use metrics as a day-to-day tool in our practice on the front line. We were also trying to weather the storm of what seemed like constant media and political scrutiny. There were many days where I felt challenged and burdened by the need to make so many changes with so little time and so few people and resources. Implementing the four disciplines of execution was a game changer. First, it convinced me that results are greatest when the game is played as a team, rather than focusing on the talents of a few individual superstars. Second, it convinced me to stop waiting for reports filled with lag measures to determine whether I was winning or losing. This was data that always arrived far too late to do anything about it. Now, I played softball for many years, and one of the things I learned in softball is that it's less painful to lose an entire game than it is to endure failing inning by inning. But when you operate using only lag measures, it's like posting the score only after each inning is over. You can see that you're losing, But by then it's too late to change your game, and the losses just keep coming. This is particularly true in a human services organization. It's easier there to just rationalize by saying things like, "Well, I'm doing good work, I am helping people, and I'm extremely busy." But when you do this, you're really just playing the game you know and waiting for the final score. If you lose, it's only a single moment of pain instead of the day-to-day, week-to-week pressure that lead measures bring. The good news is that when you apply focus to your lead measures, you actually see them move. And when your lead measures move, you start winning on your lag measures. Tragically, most public sector organizations have never had the experience of seeing a winning score every week. As a result, they seldom think of themselves as winning teams. I made it my responsibility to keep my eye on the score every week, making it public. And in the end, we sustained this focus and created a team that became used to winning instead of losing. Third, and perhaps most important, it convinced me that I had to be willing to learn new behaviors. Specifically, I had to learn to lead from a position on the field as well as from that of a senior executive. In other words, to step off the pedestal of mission and into the arena of practice. I also had to be able to move nimbly and intentionally between the leader's view at 30,000 feet and the team's view on the ground. Implementing the four disciplines makes you learn to lead differently, but it does it because you want to win. The four disciplines of execution will change the way your team moves the needle on their highest priority goals. However, it's up to you to determine what you need to do to embed them into your organization. Now, we all know how hard it can be to get people to buy into our mission and our goals, mostly because they are ours and not theirs. But when you implement the four disciplines of execution, you learn to do something different, to use involvement to generate commitment. This begins with cultivating a very specific, and for some, a very different relationship with your frontline teams. By this, I mean those people who move the transactions that produce results. Whether it's your sales team, your customer service representatives, your production operators, or your case managers, your first job in implementing the four disciplines is to stimulate an organizational hunger for success based on the overall WIG. On our team, this was particularly challenging because there was never much appetite to talk about death, even though serious injury and death were the forces preventing us from successfully executing that mission. It was a war we could not escape. Day after day, we worried about failing, and we also worried about being blamed. So when we implemented the four disciplines, we pulled our WIG right out of the heart of our fear. Our WIG was to reduce by 50% the number of incidents that can lead to death and serious injury for people in our care, custody, and oversight. Once it had been said out loud, everyone on our team could openly acknowledge it as our real mission. Interestingly, it was always the work the team wanted to do, and for many, it was the compelling reason they came back to work day after day. But creating our wildly important goal allowed us to take ownership of what was really our core mission, preventing bad things from happening to vulnerable children and adults. And that ownership created a significant shift in our approach. Instead of waiting to respond after bad things happened, we now proactively planned ways to keep them from happening. Ultimately, we used the four disciplines to make ourselves publicly accountable for reducing death and serious injury. As a result, we started to work as a team to ensure we were successful. People often ask me what specific aspect of the four disciplines made the biggest difference for my team. My answer is always the same, the weekly WIG sessions. In these powerful meetings, the cadence, the rhythm of asking your people what commitments they are willing to make to move the score forward, is the process that erases most of the distance between leaders and the actual day-to-day work in government. The cadence constantly brings to the surface policy as well as practice issues that are otherwise invisible to executive leaders. In addition, the WIG sessions allow the knowledge and the experience of the frontline team to be shared throughout the organization. This eliminates the gap between what an organization is ultimately accountable for and the actions of the frontline that are driving it. In government, any outcome of significance is almost always a lag measure, whether it's from federal or state entities, governors, or even mayors. And usually, it's also a result that has not been achieved in any recent period, if at all. Therefore, the leaders are unlikely to know what behaviors would actually promote success in achieving it, or alternatively, are causing them to fail. They feel accountable, but they aren't sure what it will take to move the needle. WIG sessions close that gap between the leader's vision and the work of the frontline, and they do it by putting everybody in the same room. In a WIG session, the flow of data about lead measures and weekly commitments forces leaders to see and hear from the frontline regularly. And conversely, it provides the frontline with unprecedented access to the eyes and ears of executive leaders when they are in a similar WIG session with them. I can assure you that the bigger and more bureaucratic the organization, the more significant this effect is. Many private sector business leaders would be surprised at how easy it is to run a large public sector organization while never really understanding, let alone being involved in, the day-to-day work. The four disciplines compels even the most senior leader to stay in the room with the front line and with the work. The second most impactful aspect of the four disciplines was what I referred to as my second job. That was creating an environment where the right work could be done the right way for the right reasons. That work is principally seen in Discipline 2, Act on the Lead Measures. This discipline became the glue that connected the front line to the overall WIG we needed to achieve, as well as to the leaders of their team. It wasn't hard to get the front line to see the importance of their day-to-day work. They knew how much it mattered. What was difficult was convincing them that the leaders had the same perspective and understanding. In a human services agency, where the threat of death and serious injury is always present, it's hard for frontline workers to trust leaders who remain distant. The unspoken question is always, who will be thrown under the bus if something goes wrong? Building trust is another large part of leading the four disciplines successfully. The best way for leaders to build that trust is by putting them in the middle of the work. Each week, those leaders are accountable for making commitments that help their team, and for reporting results of the team's effort to senior leaders, and finally for clearing the path of significant obstacles for their own teams. That's what I call putting leaders in the middle of the work. For the leaders on my team, there were three absolute requirements. First, as four disciplines leaders, we must stay the course on our WIGs. Frontline teams love a sure-footed leader, particularly when the stakes are high, and nothing rattles the confidence of a team like changing the rules in the middle of the game. Second, as four disciplines leaders, we must give the frontline what they need. This means playing the team that is already on the field. We quickly learned that a high-functioning team will take care of its own laggards, while low performers and those who resist change will initially slow down the team's efforts. It won't last long. In 4DX, there is no place to hide because of the highly visible accountability for results. This also means fixing the bureaucracy when it stands in the way of the frontline getting the job done. Often, this will require fighting the political battles to change a policy, or remove a restriction, or confront an issue, or even get more funding. Teams have little use and little respect for a leader who cannot clear the path for them. And third, As Four Disciplines leaders, we must deliver our own messages. On our team, this meant that the first person to talk about death and serious injury had to be me. If I wanted the teams to do something different, then I had to begin by saying it was safe to change our practices, and even to operate outside the boundaries of existing policy if it would reduce the number of incidents leading to death or serious injury. As you know from the opening story in this audiobook, we were ultimately successful in exceeding our wildly important goal. We reduced repeat cases of child maltreatment by a stunning 60%. From that experience, I want to end with the most important things I learned, things that I believe will help any leader implementing the four disciplines. First, embed the language of the four disciplines into your culture. One of the easiest ways for people to dismiss accountability is to say that they are already doing things that are just like the four disciplines. But the four disciplines are specific and precise, and unless you implement all of them, you don't see the real benefit. Most importantly, when the senior leader stops walking and talking the four disciplines, the entire organization immediately stops believing that she is serious. The second thing I learned is to ensure that your leaders are always clearing the path. You should immediately look for a breakdown in execution if you are not hearing clear-the-path commitments that come all the way from the front line. Always remember, non-moving lead measures on the front line mean non-moving wigs for the organization. The third thing I learned was to communicate openly and often to the front line. Every member of your team needs to see and hear your commitment to the four disciplines and to the achievement of your overall WIG. I sent weekly and often daily emails directly from my inbox all the way to the front line with no layers of leaders in between to filter my message. The fourth thing I learned is to make sure people know that it is the work on the front line that matters most. Your team needs to know that the wildly important goal must be achieved. Leadership matters. But at the same time, they need to know that you know that their work on the front line is what produces bottom line results. Don't allow the four disciplines to be about you. Make it clear that even if you leave, the four disciplines are about their ability to win. The fifth thing I learned was to focus on raising the performance of your B-level leaders all the way to that of your top performers. The single most powerful way to do this is by consistently and faithfully holding your WIG sessions. Use this discipline to show them how the four disciplines accentuates their leadership and how the success of the team comes from them. Mid-level leaders, particularly in large bureaucracies, are often unaccustomed to leading a winning team. It is more often their job to distribute and monitor policies set by others, whether they work or not, and to manage the organization through periods of transition both up and down the chain of command. They need the four disciplines. The sixth and final thing I learned was to be willing to hold the leadership high ground. In the beginning, some people will criticize the four disciplines as being all about the numbers and not about the people involved. When this happens, you have to hold strong on why the numbers matter. This was particularly true in human services, where the numbers were always about vulnerable people and about effectively helping them to live better and safer lives. But the principle is true everywhere. As the senior leader, you must be willing to stand behind the laser focus on performance that the four disciplines bring to your work, whether it is about helping children or making widgets. When I was introduced to the four disciplines of execution, I was facing the greatest challenge of my career. My 20,000 employees were completely demoralized. We were under constant media scrutiny because of deaths and accidents involving children. And the agency had burned through 6 leaders in 5 years. Because of these powerful disciplines, and because of the hard work and the dedication of all the people who dedicated their lives to this mission. We now knew that the children in our care were safer and better protected. We could not have asked for a greater or a more significant outcome.
Focusing the organization on the wildly important, with contributing author Scott Thiel. You can see from the stories in the last chapter that each leader faced the challenge of focusing the minds and hearts of literally thousands of people on a set of wildly important goals. When they created focus, their organizations accomplished truly extraordinary things. In section one, we introduced four rules to help you narrow the focus of your entire organization. Rule number one, no more than 1 to 2 wigs per team at the same time. Rule number two, the battles have to win the war. Rule number three, you can veto, but don't dictate. And rule number four, every goal has to be in the form of from X to Y by when. While these rules may seem straightforward, even simple, following them requires tremendous commitment and discipline. Creating focus is never simple for any organization. It only looks simple once it's been accomplished. However, the results are worth the effort. In fact, every successful implementation of 4DX begins when leaders take on the difficult challenge of narrowing the organization's focus. In this chapter, we will expand on these four rules and show you step by step how to translate your organization's complex strategic agenda into a set of focused wigs with clear finish lines. With actual examples, we'll also show you how to translate those wigs all the way to the front line. The result? Clarity at every level of the organization and dramatic results at the end of the process. Translating organizational strategy into wigs. The case of Opryland. When we first met the leaders of the Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, the largest convention hotel in the United States, outside Las Vegas, they had dozens of urgent priorities, including introducing new marketing and advertising programs, planning a 400,000-square-foot expansion to their 2,000-room property, launching several initiatives designed to improve their occupancy rate, controlling expenses to improve their bottom line, engaging in multiple new programs to improve the satisfaction of their guests, revamping their convention services, identifying ways to help their guests more easily navigate the 56-acre property. Like most leaders, they had their hands full. It's likely that you have your own list, and no matter how often you try to simplify it, the dizzying lists of priorities feel overwhelming. We want you to know you're not alone. As the executive team at Opryland began the 4DX process, their crucial first step was focusing the entire hotel on the wildly important. This is never automatic, particularly in large organizations. It takes work, and that work begins with answering the question, if every other area of our operation remained at its current level of performance, which one area would we want to improve the most? Remember to avoid asking the question, what's our most important priority? This question only results in a never-ending debate. As each member of the executive team expressed their idea about the one area they wanted to see improve the most, guest satisfaction rose to the top as the most impactful. The primary reason for this is that the experience of the guest literally impacted every other aspect of their business, from revenue to market share. It was also a focus to which every employee of the hotel could make a contribution. As their focus became clearer, Arthur Keith, the general manager, recommended improved guest satisfaction as the highest level wig for the hotel. His role at this point in the process was important and timely. Leaders should be open and truly listen and explore alternatives, but they may also need to step in at the right moment to help the team reach a decision. The leader must be ready to play both roles, primary participant in the discussion, but also willing to advocate a position. Selecting a high-level wig for an organization always feels a little like buying a new pair of shoes. You have to walk around in them for a little while before deciding if they feel right. Don't force the team to decide on a wig too quickly. Instead, just select the wig that seems right and let the leaders walk around in it as they develop the supporting wigs to ensure its achievement. They can always select a different wig if it doesn't feel right to apply it across the organization. A high-level wig is a serious organizational commitment, so leadership teams are often more than a little hesitant to make a choice. This is why so many organizations rarely achieve real focus. Giving your team the freedom to choose and reconsider their choices frees them to take this step. Before we go to the next step with the Opryland, let's look at where most organizational wigs come from. Three sources of organizational wigs. We've noticed that almost every leadership team, regardless of industry, size, or geography, chooses a highest level wig from one of three areas: financial, operational, or customer satisfaction. Financial wigs are measures in dollars, whether top line revenue, bottom line profits, or some key measure in between. Surprisingly, less than a third of our clients choose a financial wig as their top priority, even though financial results are always among the highest priorities. Operational wigs focus on production, quality, efficiency, or economies of scale. Most leadership teams focus here initially. These wigs often focus on key operational measures such as production volume, quality improvement, increased market share, or expansion into new areas. Customer satisfaction wigs focus on closing the gap between the current level of performance and the level that represents excellence, whether to customers of a business, patients in a hospital, or guests in a hotel. Unlike financial and operational wigs, these measures depend